Explore the tropics at Whole Foods Market through April 16th. Save on juicy finds like yellow mangoes at 5 for $5 with Prime. Sweet Dacopan citrus is back, just $3.49 per pound with Prime. Plus, save on seasonal favorites like dragon fruit, kiwi, pineapple, and more. In the meat department, pick up animal welfare certified meats with tropical-inspired marinades. And be sure to try the spicy Hawaiian pizza, back for a limited time, only at Whole Foods Market.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game.
Okay, you know, like at camps and stuff like this, you take the ball out, you ain't getting the ball back. Like, you the last one up the court, they already did their thing. So I stopped there, and I just got into a rhythm and started hooping.
The Lakers should sign Trae Young this summer.
They got to kind of start preparing for, like, if LeBron's last year is this year or next year, whenever it is. And I feel like a pick and roll with AD and a guy like Trae Young would be deadly.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The hit movie Bob Marley One Love is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life of an icon who inspired generations with his message of love, peace, and unity. Rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/OneLove to try it free now.
Welcome to All the Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio in partnership with Showtime.
Welcome back to another edition of All the Smoke.
My brother.
Jack, what's up? Very festive today.
Yes,
what
man.
What are these called? I don't want them.
Thobes.
Thobes?
Yep. Thobes by King's Cloth in Dubai.
And then you got the matching. You hit them.
JC.
I'm telling you, making it hard for your other brothers out here.
Hey, though. Man, one thing about it, man.
Not everybody could do it like you do.
You look good, you feel good, you pray good.
Okay.
Shout out to all my Muslims out there.
Who's that person with the Puff Daddy ringer?
All about the Benjamins.
Anyway, man, welcome to the show.
Perfect intro.
Isaiah Thomas. Appreciate
bro.
You, bro.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you for What's your up? Time, man.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you for trying to get him bro. On for a minute. I've been hitting him like, man. Like I want, I'm going to come. So, man, we finally got you here. We appreciate that.
Seattle boy.
Yes, sir.
You know it.
No. 2020 obviously was tough for a lot of us. You know, lost Kobe, the pandemic, the George Floyd incident. Seeing how tough that was, what are you motivated by, you know, as we go, you know, almost halfway through 2021?
I think I'm motivated by just change. You know, I think the positive out of all those things that's happened is everybody, you know, trying to change for the better. Mm. No matter the race, no matter the culture. Mm-hmm. I think we're looking forward to, you know, what's next and what can everybody change to make this world, mm-hmm. you know, a better place. And I think overall, you know, we could kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel, you know, in terms of things getting back to normal. Mm-hmm. But I think we just got to keep, you know, keep our foot on the gas to make positive change because, you know, the world is not in a great place right mm-hmm. now. And I think, you know, we can make it all better.
So much more work to do.
For sure, for mm-hmm. sure.
Where do you feel you are as far as health? Obviously, we'll talk about the injury a little later and what exactly happened to you, but where are you right now as far as health you feel?
Health, I'm good now. You know, it's been a long little 3 years since I, you know, first got injured, but mm-hmm. I'm 100% healthy now. Mm-hmm. I had a surgery, not to get too deep into it, but I had surgery last May. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, fixed my ultimate problem.
So what did they have to go in and do? We can go and explain this.
So I had a resurface of my hip. So my hip is metal now. Mm, so I got,
wow.
I'm the first one in professional sports, well, basketball, to play with a metal hip.
Mm. And so it's just half your hip, that socket?
Yeah, it's my joint.
Okay.
So what my initial problem was, my hip was bone on bone. So, you know, it's bone
no
on
cartilage.
Bone. I have no range of motion. So I was really fighting every day just to, you know, stay above water until I fixed my hip. So I got a resurface of my hip joint. It gives me the normal amount of space that everybody got in a regular joint. My shit just metal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you go through the airport, you got to go through the little...
The special one.
Yeah, you got to go through that.
Shit, that ain't nothing but my hip.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you know, that it changed my life because mm-hmm. I was in pain every day.
Right.
Not just trying to hoop. Playing with my kids,
life.
In the house, life. Mm-hmm. I was in pain. So it gave me my range of motion back. So health-wise, I'm good. Mentally, I'm in a great place. And, you know, just waiting for an opportunity. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How challenging has it been to remain patient, knowing you back to 100%, knowing what you can do, just like we know what you can do, you know what I mean? And I've been in that situation too. Not even being in the NBA, but knowing that I still had time, you know, had game left, but you on a different page. You know, you did some stuff that I wouldn't even think close to doing in my career. But knowing the player you are, bro, how does it feel to be patient knowing that you deserve to be back out there?
I'm human at the end of the day, so yeah. That should be hurting.
Yeah.
You know, that, and I'ma just keep it all the way 100. It be hurting, but you know, I got kids at home.
Right.
They watch me closely, and there's no quitting me.
You gotta stay strong.
There's no quit. Obviously, I got my days where, you know, some days are tougher than others. I'm watching guys sign that I feel like I'm better than, mm-hmm. but you know, it's not always about, you know, the next man. Mm-hmm. I try to worry about, you know, what I can control.
Right.
And the only thing I control is being prepared. You know, when my name called, being able to take advantage of the opportunity. And if I just soak and be out the house and be hot at the situation, when my name is called, I won't be ready to take advantage of that.
Right.
So, you know, overall, I'm in a good place mentally, but yeah, I'm human. That should be hurting.
Yeah,
that should be hurting. I'll be having my days where I'd be like, damn, like how I go from being top five in MVP voting to years later, you know, I'm trying to find a team to play on.
Right.
It just makes no sense.
Not
but, you know, that's the business of the game. You know, that's just is what it is. I just know if my name is called again and when it is called, I'll be ready to take it to the top. Mm-hmm. I promise you that. I'm healthy now, and I don't have to fight that battle of, you know, showing the world I'm healthy.
Right.
Are you able to still watch games and follow games, or is it?
I mean, this year has been a little different for me because I'm a hoop head. Like, mm-hmm. I love hoop. Right. I've always loved it. I've always watched most games every night. This year has just been a little different. I think just because obviously I watch hoop, but not as much as I did. The game is changing, so it's kind of tough to watch,
mm-hmm.
you know, how the game is being played. But, you know, that's my ultimate goal, to get back in the league, obviously. And I'm going to stay connected at all times, but I don't watch actual games as much as I did. I don't.
Yeah, yeah.
You got a prediction on who you think is coming out of East or West? Any teams you think are clear cut?
Honestly, I don't think nobody can beat Brooklyn in, you know, four times.
Right.
You know, on paper, that is.
Right.
Obviously, we haven't really seen them go through any adversity altogether. So mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest question mark. But out of the East, I mean, I'm going to go with Brooklyn. And then, I mean, you can't really count LeBron out until he's down and
all
out.
The way
right. So, yeah. So
that's what we always say.
It got to go through L.A. and the West, but it will be tough for them boys. It mm-hmm. will be.
Great.
How do you feel about the elite guard play that we continue to witness?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, them guards, what you got? Lillard, you got
Kyrie,
James Harden,
yeah.
Steph has turned it up the last 2 months.
Russ.
Westbrook's a cheat code. I mean, you know, them like them top 10 point guards, it's like any given night they can, you know, they can give you 50.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the scary part about it. But
fall right in that category.
It's dope to watch that though, because mm-hmm. you know the game is about that guard position.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously the wings and KD and LeBron. And the list goes on in that, but you know, the guards are carrying the league right now.
Yeah.
And it's at a good space right now with that, because I mean, I'm a scoring guard and you got to be a scoring guard to be effective.
Right.
In today's game.
So how far removed from your Boston year? Four years since you were in Boston?
For 2017.
So it's kind of crazy to think how much it's changed from a standpoint of how many more shots point guards are taking now.
Oh no.
And you take 15 threes and that's cool.
Yeah, and it's fine.
Yeah, like, that's fine. That's just three-pointers. That's not total shots.
To shoot
right.
that. So it's crazy. We be having talks about that, me and my home, Jamal Crawford, which you guys know.
Shout out, fam. We need you on the show, fam.
Showtime.
We need you on there. Just how in 4 years the game changed.
That's what I was saying.
Like even when I was playing, you know, at my peak at that year, the scores were still 98 to 100, maybe. Mm-hmm. Now you see regulation. It's 145 to 140.
It's a lot of shot attempts.
You know, the numbers are magnified now, obviously, because
mm-hmm.
with the way the game is played.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you still got to go out there and produce. So, you know, them guards is doing that at a high level are doing an amazing job night in and night out.
So the guys you had just mentioned, you know, some of the elite guards, you had good battles against all of them, in particular Steph, Westbrook, and CP3. Tell us about some of the battles you had with those three.
Man, Steph, it started early with Steph just because, you know, that Sac and Golden State little mm-hmm. connection. My first 3 years, you know, they wasn't, you know, who they obviously were for like 6-7 straight years. But we had them battles. And, you know, going against Steph, you got to be locked in, mm-hmm. you know, from once he get the ball in bounds because he's that special. Mm-hmm. Westbrook is probably always my toughest cover because, you know, obviously he's way bigger than me, but he's on go from mm-hmm. from the tip off to you know, the buzzer sounds. And then CP3 is just OG. He's been someone I've always looked up to, you know, since he got in the league, when I was in high school and even, you know, a few years before that. So he's always tough in a different way because he's the best leader out there. Mm-hmm. He'll do whatever it takes to win.
Crafty.
He's the one where you hate playing against him, but when you're on his team, you love it because he's that competitive and mm-hmm. and he'll do whatever it takes. But, you know, other than them three guards, like, obviously I battle with them, but like I said, the guard list is heavy. It's every night. Like, you got, when I first got in the league 10 years ago, it was probably 6-7 of them where you really had to get your sleep before the night, you know, mm-hmm. before that game. Now it's like almost
every night.
Every night where you can't be like, oh, that's gonna be an easy one. You know, so it's competitive out there for them guards.
You just said it, he's a cheat code. How do you feel, your thoughts on Russ breaking the Oscar record?
It's crazy because if you go back on all them interviews with, you know, the top, Magic Johnson, everybody who talked about, you know, that record would never be broken. Mm-hmm. It's like,
right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's all you got to, you know, that's all you got to explain. Like, mm-hmm. he really broke a record that nobody thought. It was like a John Stockton record.
Right.
Obviously, mm-hmm. that's probably never going to be broken here.
Right.
But that triple-double, and it happened within 5 years, mm-hmm. really, like where he really turned up. So, you know, Westbrook is a different animal. And I think that's why he doesn't always get the credit he deserves because, mm-hmm. you know, he shoots it straight at you.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody don't like that. But he deserves everything and more. He's one of the best point guards that ever played a game.
By far.
Ever.
Absolutely. You actually have the record for the shortest point guard to record a triple-double, right? So tell us about that night.
Man, you was going
to get boards, and it was problems
on you.
Stealing them.
They was coming. They was just dropping in my lap. Because that's one thing in my whole career, like, ever since I was a little boy, I'm like, I'm probably never going to get that. Like, you know, a triple-double. Mm-hmm. So I remember we was playing the Wizards in SAC. It was my third year. And I might have had like 12 boards that game. I don't know how, but I got it. And after the game, they gave me the ball, and they were like, you're the shortest person in NBA history to get. And I was like, well, shit, at least I got something for it.
You know?
So I can go. I don't think anybody shorter than me is going to, you know, get a triple-double.
Mm, that's tough, man. It's hard for the Sixth. They got to get 10 rebounds.
Yeah, that's tough. That's why I give all respect to Westbrook, whether he's chasing rebounds or not. Like, you got to go out there and do it.
But he makes it look so easy. That's why I don't think people appreciate it no
more. Because
you'll look up real quick and like, damn, he's got 9 in the first quarter?
They don't.
And then they just don't appreciate because he makes it look like it's not that. That shit is hard to do.
Exactly.
Speaking of short guards, obviously the evolution, you were one of the smaller players, but you handed yourself, you know, Nate Archibald, the other Isaiah Thomas, Damon Stoudemire, Allen Iverson. Who are some of the guys you looked up to knowing that you weren't going to be a 6'8 type Magic Johnson point guard?
Obviously, my namesake, Isaiah Thomas, was, you know, a big one, you know, watching his old tapes. But Damon Stoudemire was somebody I modeled my whole game after. He's somebody from the Pacific Northwest, lefty.
Shout out, Dan.
Stayed in the Pac-10. Mm-hmm. Like, somebody that, you know, realistically, I felt like I could be like. Obviously, Kobe was, you know, my favorite player ever. But then you also had Terrell Brandon from the Pacific Northwest that was big.
Cavs.
Muggsy Bogues, Nate Robinson, you know, all the small guys that paved the way for me. But Allen Iverson and Damon Stoudemire were two that, you know, I felt like somehow, some way I can somewhat be them. And, you know, Damon was a little more realistic. But then when I, you know, started to cook them boys, I'm like, okay, maybe I can be Allen Iverson, you know? So,
yeah.
And then when I got the stamp from him, it was like,
dope.
Nobody can tell me nothing after he stamped me. And, but those are the small guards that, you know, I looked up to. Obviously, everybody before me that made it and was small, that paved the way for me, I appreciate it. But those number of guys really helped me throughout my whole career, whether it be when I was in college, you know, or throughout my NBA career. And I can't thank them enough.
That's what's up. Tell us about your upbringing, and when did you find sports, in particular basketball?
So I'm from Tacoma, Washington, about 40 minutes south of Seattle.
My parents always said I had a ball in my hand since I was a little boy. So basketball was the first thing I fell in love with. You know, what I knew what love was basketball. Like, real talk.
What age?
I remember third grade.
He was
third
right.
grade, my dad took me to my first Sonics game, Sonics versus Lakers. Actually, Sonics versus Timberwolves, Stephon Marbury Ooh. In 1997 and KG. Mm-hmm. And I wore a Laker warm-up because my dad's from Inglewood, so I was brainwashed into being a Laker fan. So I wore a whole Laker, the little purple breakaway pants, the yellow tie.
I couldn't tell you shit. You had the tearaways?
On a Timberwolves Sonics game. Like, it didn't make no sense, but... Basketball, since that day, since I was able to, you know, be in the tunnel, slap NBA players' hands, like, that changed my life. Mm. I felt like that's what I wanted to be since that day. Mm. And, you know, to fast forward to now, you know, when I'm playing in NBA games and you see that fan with his hand out, I make sure I always slap those because
that's
like...
What's up.
You used to be him.
I used to be him. Right. And that's what made my dream, like, that's what made my dream a reality. Those little things. And for me to be able to, you know, do those things to kids and the next generation, that means everything. But ever since I was in third grade, basketball was my ultimate goal, to make it to the NBA.
That's dope. Your name represents greatness in this game. Tell everyone how you actually got your name.
It's two sides to it. So my dad's a Laker fan. He made a wager with one of his friends. This is what they're telling me. This is what they're telling me.
On his name.
He made a wager with one of his friends that if, you know, the Pistons beat the Lakers, he would name me Isaiah Thomas. My mom loved the name, but she grew up in church. She wanted it spelled the biblical way. So it was two sides to it. My dad lost the bet. My mom loved the name, but she
got... So the Lakers happened to get swept that year, right?
Yeah, they got beat.
And that's how you know you had
it. Yeah, so that's the story that they got.
Who knows crazy, if it's true right? or not. But
they and then I happened to play hoop, so we took it and ran with it.
Yeah.
That's funny.
What was the funniest ad mentioned on social media that you remember, but it was supposed to be directed at Isaiah Thomas, the OG?
Man, when The Last Dance came out, they hated the OG. Oh my God, that was on me though. Like, but when The Last Dance came out, oh my goodness, it was like for them, whatever, six straight weeks, every episode.
Oh yeah, son.
It was like F you, F the Bad Boys. Then you got some hitting me like your dad's a this and that. I'm like, I'm just laughing at it because I'm like, little did you know, like I have nothing to do with the Bad Boys, The Last Dance. Right. I got nothing to do. That's not my pops.
Right.
But you know that happens every now and then, especially when I was, you know, when I was a little younger and Isaiah Thomas was on the Knicks. You know, they used to boo him when he was the coach.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go to them games with Jamal, because Jamal Crawford and Nate Robinson was on them teams. And it even started from there, the social media. They be on his head. I be feeling bad. They be on my head too sometimes, but a lot be directed at him just because I'm that MJ stuff.
Yeah.
That's funny.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18. My first game in Kentucky. They're saying Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
That's my first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boog. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to be my name.
Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field. From free business coaching to tailored training and an extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million black businesses initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive 120-day free trial at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
The culture in basketball, just the energy of the Pacific Northwest, particularly the Seattle area basketball, has been so strong. What is it like out there in the summer? I mean, you guys probably have the most pros, if you could think of it. But what are those summers like? I know Jamal runs a summer league, but what is that interaction like? Because you guys have so many people that played in the NBA, that are going to the NBA, and that have played in the NBA.
Man, it's everything. And, you know, to answer the question first is, Doug Christie started that. You know, Doug Christie was...
Shout out Doug.
He was the one that started that with Jamal and Jason Terry and those guys. And then... it just trickled down. And I remember when I first met Jamal, I'd known Jason since I was in third grade. His dad coached me growing up in high school. Mm-hmm. So Jet always been a mentor of mine. But when I met Jamal, I was 15 years old. I met Jamal. I remember the things that those guys always told me. It was like, the things we do for you, we want you to do for the next guys coming up.
That's how I go.
And it's always been like that. And, you know, in that area, it's been like that from Jamal Crawford, Jason Terry, you go Brandon Roy, Nate Robinson, Aaron Brooks, Spencer Haas, Martell Webster, the first guy out of Seattle to go out of high school, straight out of high school to the NBA. And the list goes on. I mean, you got those older guys, then you got me, DeJounte Murray, Kevin Porter Jr., Michael Porter Jr. Play 1 year high school in Seattle, so we gonna count him in. I know I'm missing a lot, but the McDaniels brothers that play right now. We got a young group of guys that are coming up as well. So, you know, that circle is really tight. And like you said, the summer times be, like when dudes get back home the next couple weeks, you know, it's gonna be like how you guys had the runs at UCLA. Yeah.
Explain the summer scene, though, because the summer league is like, you got people from all over the NBA, but all over the world coming out there to play in Jamal's
Summer League. And like I said, that started with Doug Christie back in the day. And then it transferred over to Jamal, which Doug gave reins to Jamal. And Jamal's been, I mean, he's had you out there. He's had, he's had everybody out there. And that's the dope thing, because during the week we play, all the pros play, and then during the weekend is when Jamal has his pro-am. So it's like all week we're hooping, kicking it with each other.
Right.
It's real, it's a real brotherhood up there that, you know, unless you're in it, you can't, it's hard to explain it.
Right. No,
everybody's
dope.
Super solid and super close.
Because we went out there, I remember we went out there for Jamal's wedding.
The wedding, and y'all played at midnight.
Yeah, we had a midnight
and it was like 6,000 fans.
And shit was sold out. But that's when I saw DeJounte Murray for the first time.
Yeah,
and like,
he was
this high school kid who was nice as fuck. I'm like, all right. You know, I mean, I was already blowed. I didn't really want to play anyway. It was at midnight. You want me to stay sober the whole entire day?
Impossible.
Don't
that's
play
impossible.
At midnight. But anyway, we made it happen. But this young boy, he was incredible, bro. Like, he's like a young Jamal watching. He had bounce too. This nigga was incredible. I think he was only a junior at the time.
Yeah,
too.
He was in high school. I remember that
game. But I remember that just like it was midnight and the gym was packed. That's how much love they had for Jamal. It was crazy.
Yeah,
but he did it for his wedding though. That was like one of his wedding
events.
Yeah,
that was his little.
Like we all like Blake. DJ,
everybody,
we
your whole team was there,
bro. The whole Clippers team was out there. High school, you spent 3 years, South Kent Prep, and then you transferred. What made you go prep school?
So prep school, I had to get my academics right in order for me to accept a scholarship at University of Washington. So I did 3 years of high school back home. I did 2 years. I did an extra year of high school at the prep school. So I had to get my grades right in order for me to accept the scholarship. And then once I was able to do that, which was probably the toughest thing I ever been through in terms of, it was an all-boys school, suit and tie every day. Mm-hmm. It was just different from where I came from. And then at 16 years old, leaving, you know, my parents, leaving my close homies.
I was going to ask, how tough was
like,
that?
Like, that was tough. That was a cultural change for me. Like, it went from me having to wear a suit and tie every day to, you know, me being the man back home. Like, that was tough. But in order for me to accomplish my goal of making it to college and, you know, possibly making it to the NBA, I had to go do it. And looking back at it now, that was probably one of the best decisions of my life because it made me grow up faster than I needed to. I was on my own at 16. So, you know, from 16 on, I haven't been back home, you know, like we're living under my parents. And I think that's helped me become, you know, the young man, the man I am today. And, you know, ultimately the father I am as well. So, you know, it was a good side to it.
A blessing in disguise.
You know, yeah, at the time, that shit was
tough. I can imagine.
It made me think.
And you had to go to Connecticut too, right?
Yeah, I was in Connecticut, the middle of nowhere. But luckily, the good thing about that, Jamal and Nate played for the Knicks. So I would take the train up there on the weekends. Yeah, I would take the little train over to White Plains for the weekend, and I was able to kick it with them.
That's what's up, yeah.
Who else was recruiting you besides Washington?
So ultimately, before I committed to Washington, I was going to commit to Indiana. I wanted to be Isaiah Thomas. I wanted to follow in that. They had a coach named Mike Davis, which was an African-American coach. That was really good and gave me one of my first offers. He ended up getting fired, and I had to go in a different direction. And then if I wasn't going to go to Indiana, I wanted to stay home. And then, but when I went to prep school, that's when, like, UConn came on me, all the East Coast schools. And I was thinking about opening my recruitment back up because, you know, I was never recruited by them schools. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, I wanted to go back to the crib at the end of the day. I wanted to be home. I took 2 years. I was 2 years away from home already. I was ready to get back home and, you know, try to put on for my town. And I was able to do that in a cool, solid way.
A lot of accolades, Pac-10 Freshman of the Year, tournament MVP. What was your college experience like that you were back at home and you were killing?
Man, it was everything. Because, you know, before I went there, we had Nate Robinson there, Will Conroy, Trey Simmons, Brandon Roy, obviously the best, you know, guy to come out of University of Washington. But, you know, when I was headed back home, I was hyped because I was away for 2 years.
Right.
So I was hyped to be able to, you know, put on for the state of Washington, to be able to, you know, go to a big-time college and just hoop and be home at doing it. So it was probably the best experience of my lifetime. Like, college was so dope. Just, you know, lifelong friends that we still got group texts with all my teammates. And everything with being back home and going to college was everything I dreamed of. And we happened to be pretty good. Like, we went to Sweet 16 1 year. We went to NCAA tournament 3 years in a row. So it was some success back home. And then, you know, ultimately I was able to get my jersey retired back in college. Mm-hmm. So it was shit that, you know, was happening that I didn't even dream of when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Talk to us about your legendary shot you made in the Pac-10 tournament.
So the shot, that was everything because obviously it was on national TV, championship game.
Gus Johnson.
Mm-hmm. In Staples Center, you know, Kobe's Pac-10 my favorite tournament. Player. So it was like that whole last possession, I was like, man, this is what Kobe did. This is what and my coach, for the first time in my little college career, when I told him it's good, I got it, he was like, okay, go to work. And I was able to, you know, isolation play at the top of the key. I think yet the day before, Kemba Walker hit his step back.
Yeah, he made a
so
boy
it was
fall,
already
right?
in my mind that, like, okay, I might have to go to the step back. This is my chance. And, you know, I did a little crossover. He sat on the crossover. The step back got me my separation. And once I shot it,
you knew it was good.
I knew it was going in. And then it was just like, you know, everything you dreamed of, being in outside at the park when you're little, counting down from 10, and, you know, thinking you're Michael Jordan and Kobe. So that was like a moment that, you know, I'm going to cherish forever, for sure.
So who ass did you bust in college that was memorable?
Man, college was tough. You know, I didn't really cook nobody like I was doing in the NBA in college.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't, you know, college is a little, well, you didn't go to college, so College was, you know, it's harder to score in college, I feel like, because it's just, there's no space.
Yeah.
There's no space, no defense of 3 seconds in the key. So, obviously, I was doing well, but I didn't really cook nobody that I can remember. Obviously, the game-winning shot was probably my biggest moment.
Yeah.
And I had a pretty good game that game, too, but it wasn't no game where it stood out where I was frying the next guard.
Yeah.
I'm not even gonna lie. I could have just.
But you saved that for the biggest stage, though.
Yeah. So the game winner was, I could say that was probably one of my best games.
Yeah. Sure. So with all the accolades you acquired in college, and you end up being the last pick of the draft that after you're done, what was that like?
That was the longest day of my life. That was a tough day, just because I obviously going into the draft, I knew I wasn't gonna be. Like, I was projected to be early second round. Like, that was the highest. So mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I'm solid with that. If I'm just given a realistic chance, I'll take it and run with it. I probably had, like, 20 workouts, you know, that pre-draft. So I was chasing everybody. Like, mm-hmm. I was just trying to just show everybody that I'm better than the next man.
Who were some of the guys you were working on in the draft? Who was in that draft with you?
Man, so Kyrie Irving was number one. Okay. Obviously, he wasn't about to go against nobody, but Brandon Knight, I went against him. I went against a few second-round guys that got picked ahead of me. Not to, you know, I don't want to put no names out there. We ain't on that. But I destroyed dudes. I destroyed them. I mean, I'm not even going to sugarcoat it. I destroyed them, and that's why it was frustrating on draft night. Because I'm like, dang, what else do they want? Like, we went head-to-head. Guys is getting drafted before me. I've had better college careers than them. And it was just tough, but, you know, at the end of the day, I was like, okay, if I'm drafted, that's all I ever asked for, was a chance.
Right.
Sacramento, which was my first workout in 2011, I forgot all about them. After the Lakers, they had 4 second-round picks, and I thought at least one of those picks was going to be me. And once they picked 2 guards, with I think like the 52nd pick, 54th pick, my mind started to race, like, dang, I'm probably not going to get drafted. Because I forgot about Sac. And then my agent called me, like, the 58th pick. He Sac's going to draft you with the last pick. And that's when I was like, cool, I'm not even tripping. If they give me a chance,
that's all you need.
I'm prepared. I know what to do with it. And then, you know, my back was against the wall because that year was the lockout year. Mm-hmm. We didn't have no summer league. So, you know, summer league is where I could have got busy and, you know, got a guaranteed deal. So right. I went all the way into... Shit, the lockout was over, like, I think the day before Christmas or something.
Christmas, mm-hmm.
Got invited to training camp, and then it was all she wrote after that. Like, I was able to get a solid opportunity to show, you know, I can play at this level. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every step of the way, that's all I did. I just prepared myself, and then when my name was called, I took advantage.
Mm. What was your welcome to the NBA moment?
My welcome to the NBA moment was, so the first game of the season, we played the Lakers. Kobe Bryant, obviously my favorite player ever. There was a rule in training camp, Paul Westphal, rest in peace. Guys would try to back me down, and they would just always turn the ball over for whatever reason. Like, I'm not saying I'm super defender. It's just they would try to exploit, you know, the mismatch, but always seem to turn the ball over or take a bad shot. So in training camp, Paul Westphal was like, nobody's backing down IT. Like, don't do it, or you're getting subbed out. So when Paul Westphal put me in the game, I remember the second quarter, he's naming who everybody got. And then I'm like, coach, who do I got? He's like, you got Kobe. And remember, nobody can back you down. I'm like,
kind of gash.
Like, it was funny because I was like, I appreciate you putting me in, but bro, Kobe's backing everybody down. Like, it didn't matter. So the first 3 possessions, they do a little ISO. I'm over behind Kobe just smiling. Like, I'm smiling, trying to guard him, knowing he's about to fade away. He hits 2 out of 3 shots. The first shot he hit, I'm sprinting down court just laughing. Like, damn, I'm here. Like,
yeah.
The first time in my life where somebody scored on me, I was like, I was smiling and happy about it. Because, you know, that was my favorite player. Right. So it was like, even touching his jersey, I was like, damn, I made it. Like, you can hit this fadeaway on me all game. Like, I'll be solid. And that was my welcome to the NBA moment.
Yeah,
Paul Westphal throwing me in there and being like,
yeah,
nobody could back you down, and me having to guard Kobe the first 3 possessions of my NBA career. So
that's
that was
funny. You remember how many he had that game?
I don't remember how many he had, but he had 4 on me. He had 2. He was 2 for 3.
Yeah.
He was 2 for 3 on me. So that was my little welcome to the NBA moment for sure.
What was the state of the Kings at that time? You guys had a lot of young talent.
Yeah, we had DeMarcus Cousins, Rudy Gay. Mm-hmm. We had a talented team. But like you said, we was young. I think it was three or four coaches in my 3 years there. So there was no stability there. And it was just tough. I mean, you guys know, being on a young team, having different coaches, there's no structure. So that was probably the toughest part, because we had the talent. We just couldn't put it together. Mm-hmm. But my experience in SAC, they gave me my first chance. Them fans in SAC are amazing. Right. The community in mm-hmm. SAC, I fell in love with Sacramento. Like, mm-hmm. that will always be, a special place in my heart for sure. Because they gave me my first.
916.
Yeah. Shout out to your hometown. They gave me my first opportunity, and, I tried to take it and run with it.
Talk to us about how good Boogie was.
Oh, man. He was every big before what they doing now. Embiid, Joker.
Better than AD.
Yeah. He was better than AD.
With all due respect.
With all due respect. But he was, what they are now. Like, he was the point center.
Yeah, doing it all.
He was doing everything. And that's the frustrating part, because he was doing so much, but there was no way we just wasn't built to win. And it was just a waste of years for him, because, as you guys know, them first few years, obviously everybody's trying to get paid, but that was a generational talent. Before he got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
He was what MB's doing. He could bang with you, he could take you to the wing,
but more fluid with it, though.
Way more fluid. And right. Boogie's that's my dog. And he did it, his way. It wasn't gonna be no other way but his.
That's a great way to say it.
Only thing you can do is respect that. He didn't change for nobody.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, that's my dog, and I'm happy to see him, in a winning situation where he could, possibly win a championship.
I think he got some good games ahead of him.
He's in a good situation right now where they rock with him, too.
Absolutely.
So
it's important.
That's all it's about.
Mike Malone, what kind of coach is he? What was y'all connection like?
Mike was a player's coach.
Yeah.
He was for the culture, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the first coach that DeMarcus, somewhat respected, from day one. And I think, you see what he's doing in Denver right now. It's obvious, because he's a player's coach. He relates to the players. And he's been like that ever since, he's been an assistant in the league. His dad was a coach with the Bad Boys. So it's installed in him to be that. And he's a hell of a coach, man. He let me rock out. My third year was kind of my breakout year. I averaged 20.6 assists, and I had a lot to do with him. I remember one conversation he had with me at one point in my third year, because everybody was in my ear about, trying to be a pass-first point guard. That's just never been who I am. I'm a scoring guard that makes plays. And I remember one time he brought me aside. He's like, bro, you can't be John Stockton. There's no way. You're not going to be him. Be you.
Mm-hmm.
And be who Isaiah Thomas is. And, ever since that day, I kind of took that, that confidence that he instilled in me and ran with it. Because, all the NBA is about is opportunity and situation.
Right.
Everybody got hoop game. If you're put in the right situation where there's confidence poured into you, 9 times out of 10, you're going to succeed.
You'll be all right, yeah.
For sure.
That's what people don't understand, though, is that I had a situation like that in Golden State that the team Jack and I played on, but Nelly was the first coach. Just go out there and play. I don't care if you make a mistake, just play hard. And when you hear a coach tell you that, really? What?
Yeah.
That's all you need to hear.
I mean, the coach, all due respect to every coach out there, but, that could be the best defender for most players.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He could be first team all defense.
Mm, for real. No bullshit. Yeah.
And you got to, somehow figure out ways to get past those, but, sometimes that shit be tough.
Mm-hmm. You break out with the career, your third year, 20.6 assists. You're part of a sign-in trade to Phoenix. Talk to us about that. Was that blindside? Are you expecting that?
No, it was because I signed with Phoenix in a free agent, and then they had to work the sign-in trade.
Okay.
So I knew that was going to happen. I was surprised that I didn't go back to SAC. That was probably the biggest surprise, because I felt like with them bringing guards in every year, and then me sending them out, I feel like that was enough for three straight years.
Right.
But, obviously, change of heart, whatever the situation may be. I go to Phoenix. We end up having three guards, Bledsoe, Dragic. Dragic just come off third team All-NBA. He had a hell of a year. They almost make the playoffs. I'm playing well that year. Obviously, we're playing well. I think we're seventh in the West before the trade deadline happened and the trade. But it was just, it was before, you know, now where three or four guards can play with each other at the same time. It was just tough, like, because every night somebody was upset, obviously, because we had Dragic, Bledsoe, me. We also had Gerald Green, too. So, like, me and Gerald was coming off the bench, and there would be some nights where we are in the game. And obviously, they just played Bled. They trying to pay Dragic, so they're going to be hot. You know, if they don't end the game. So it was heated at times. Not between us, though. Not between the players. Obviously, we was solid. That was one of my, you know, my best teams I've been on in terms of the guys on the team, the camaraderie we had. Everybody messed with each other.
And Phoenix is a cool city.
And Phoenix is,
too.
You know, Phoenix is all loved here.
Hell
so
yeah.
Then, you know, and then I get traded in the middle of the year to where it was a blessing in disguise. Obviously, I get traded to Boston. It was all she wrote after that.
I mean, obviously, you continue to improve, and everything kind of comes together in Boston, you know, with the historical franchise. Talk to us about, obviously, being there and then how things just kind of continue to transpire for you.
So for me, going to Boston, I was caught off guard with that trade midseason because we was in the playoff race. We knew Dragic demanded a trade, so we were waiting on that. And then when that happened, like 5 minutes later, agent calls, he's like, you about to get traded to Boston. I'm like, damn, I'm already thinking they just traded Rondo, so they rebuilding. Like, this would be my first time even possibly making the playoffs if I stay with Phoenix. So I was hot at the situation because I knew they were in rebuild mode, and I'm like, man, I don't want to be on a bad team again. Mm-hmm. But I remember the first person calling me after the trade, OG Isaiah Thomas, he's like, you might not think it now, but this is going to be the best. This is the best, you know, situation for your career. And at that time, I'm like, damn, bro, I'm in Phoenix. It's hot. I don't even got a coat. Boston is rebuilding. It's cold as hell out there. I'm like, man, I don't want to go. This is before I talked to Danny, talked to Brad, all them. So then I get traded there, and then I just, you know, genuinely it worked out. Like, they needed somebody like me. I needed somebody like them that was going to give me a chance to go rock out. And then I was able to do that. Brad put the ball in my hands. And, you know, it was for 3 years, it was everything I dreamed of, you know, being the man. Obviously, from the jump, it wasn't like that. I was a sixth man the first year. The second year.
So who was on the team when you first got there? The starters.
So it was Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley. And that was Smart's rookie year. Avery Bradley. And then I forgot who else started after. Evan Turner was there.
Evan Turner.
And those were the guards. So my first year, I was thinking when I got traded, I'm like, okay, I'm coming in starting. Cool. They say I was coming off the bench. I was fine with that. I ended up playing really well the end of the year. We ended up going to the playoffs, getting swept by Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Fast forward the second year, which was my first All-Star year. I remember Brad Stevens coming to me in preseason. And he's like, man, you're obviously our best player. But for this team, it'd be best for you to come off the bench. And I was like, like, that hurt me because I worked hella hard that summer. I'm like, this is a good opportunity. I'm going to be starting. It hurt, but I'm like, okay, I get it. It's all good. Two games into the season, Smart ended up getting hurt one game. I don't know how. He, like, messed up his toe, shoot around. He like, I'm not playing. Brad's like, you're going to start tonight, but this ain't permanent. Because they knew when they said I was starting, I'm like, okay, I'm going to take it and run with it. Take it and run with it. They're like, it's not permanent. Smart come back, you're going to go back to it. I'm like, okay. Smart comes back in two games, but those two games I had 31 and 29. Avery ended up getting hurt. So I stay in the starting lineup, and then it was over after that. Like, little people know that the start that year, I was supposed to come off the bench. Mm. My first All-Star year. And then those two little injuries happened.
And your two starts, you averaged 30.
And then it was over. And then, you know, I took that opportunity and ran with it. I ended up, you know, making my first All-Star game, which was crazy because it was Kobe's last All-Star game in Toronto. So it was just, you know, I always dreamed of that happening. I didn't know if it was going to happen. I didn't know if that opportunity was ever going to come, but I knew one thing, I was going to be prepared for it if it did. And then my third year, which was my second All-Star year, the game just slowed down for me. Like, it was just so easy after that. No disrespect to nobody. It was just, I knew every night I was going to get 30. Just because I had the opportunity and I prepared for it. Like, I knew where my shots was coming from. I knew all of that, and I prepared. Like I said, I prepared for those moments. I always dreamed about being the man, being on one of the best teams in the NBA and having that opportunity. And then when it came, one thing that I do regret, those opportunities, I never appreciate, not appreciated them. I was so locked in the moment that I was like, man, nah. Like, the enjoying games I had 50, really? I'm like, fuck, I should have had 60.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I never enjoyed those moments because I was just so locked into what's next.
Yeah.
And I always say, like, I think I was just so paranoid because, you know, nothing was ever given to me. So I was always just like, I might go back to bench tomorrow. You know, like, that was my mindset. So those 3 years in Boston were everything to me. They allowed me to reach heights that I only dreamed of, and they allowed me to reach, you know, be able to inspire so many kids that look like me, that's my height, that never get a real chance. So, you know, that's what that was for. When I was able to hit the top like that, it was like, it was for the next little dude that has a problem getting his foot in the league, you know, showing that a little dude can have the number one record in the NBA, to be the number one seed, to take a team to the conference finals. Like, that can happen.
Right.
You know, when it's not normal, they don't like that.
Right.
So that's the hardest part. So, you know, that was my motivation to make it easier for the, you know, the guys coming behind me.
Mm-hmm. So fast forward into the playoffs of 17, you tragically lose your sister. Talk to us about that moment, that experience. I lost my mom at the beginning of after the We Believe season, like, diagnosed with cancer November 1st, died the 27th, and I was out of it. The whole year was kind of a wash. You were able to, through the grace of God, continue on and actually play great. But talk to us just about that experience and how important she was to you.
Man, that was, I always tell people, that was the best year of my career, but the worst year of my life.
Right.
You know, like, that was real life shit that I went through, and that I mean, you know, it still hurts me to this day. But I think the thing that kept me going was, like, basketball has been the only thing that ever keep me going when I'm going through some real shit. Mm-hmm. So, like, people always ask me, how did you play? It was like, that was the only option.
That was the only thing to do.
I wasn't about to be at the house and just crying the whole time. Like, that was my 2-3 hours where, you know, I can get that off my mind. But then, obviously, at the end of the game, real life hit. Like, when I'm going back home, it's just...
Mm-hmm. Back to the real world.
Yeah, it's back to she's not here. So, obviously, my teammates, the organization, my family, you know, everybody in my immediate circle helped me throughout that time. That was the toughest time of my life. But to answer your question, basketball was the only thing that I could possibly do to be solid for the most part. And that was all her. That was all God. Like, you know, my hip was fucked up. I was battling, and I wasn't just battling on the court. I was battling in real life, and that was the hardest part. And, you know, knowing the season I had and how many people I was reaching to inspire, that's why I kept going. I'm like, bro, this can change somebody's life. Mm-hmm. You know, that's going through some real shit, to give them the courage to keep going. And, you know, that's all I did. Obviously, I hurt myself even more.
Mm.
I fucked up my money. But in that moment,
right,
there was no other way. Like, if I had to do it again, I would probably do it again, because that was the only thing that helped me through that, you know, the toughest time of my life. And, you know, you take the good with the bad when it comes to stuff like that.
Right.
You dropped 33. Hours after hearing this news, rally your team back from an 0-2 deficit to beat the Bulls, win the second round, go into the conference finals against Cleveland, and, like you said, fucked your hip up,
yeah,
but kept pressed, because sometimes we're our own worst enemies.
For sure.
And you know you're on the brink of consistent all-star, MVP conversation. That big paycheck is right around the corner. That $150 million is right around the corner. That competitor in you wouldn't let you stop. Talk to us about just getting to that conference finals and then being hurt, and then kind of the trickle-down effect after that.
So I hurt myself back in March. Carl Anthony Towns had fell on me. Tweaked my hip a little bit. But at that point in time, I only messed my knee up. Like, I sprained my knee. My hip was like, I didn't feel nothing. So a couple weeks later, where I felt some discomfort in my hip. It wasn't nothing crazy. We took MRIs, everything was solid, boom. Once we hit the playoffs, the tragic news happened. My hip was slowly getting a little worse. The only thing that I would have against Boston, you know, everybody hated Boston for what they did to me. It's a business, I understand it. I'm not tripping on it. The only thing that I think they handled wrong was not explaining to me what the extent of my injury could be if I do play.
Mm.
So yeah, that was the biggest thing for me that I disliked. Because nobody gave me no insight, okay, if you do play,
right,
this can happen.
We have to hear that. Because if you
on
tell
everything.
Us, it's going to be sore.
Because it was a bone bruise. Right. At the end of the day, it was a bone bruise. Right. Like, that's what they said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you're going to tell me it's a bone bruise, I'm playing 10 times out of 10. Right. Like, I'm going to figure it out.
I'm going to get through that.
So that was probably the only thing that I wish they would have done different. And I would have really sat down and really asked those questions. Like, what worst case scenario, what could happen? Obviously, that didn't happen. Fast forward, I keep playing to game two of the Eastern Conference Finals. I remember, no disrespect to Deron Williams, but he was on his way out. Like, he was getting a little slower. I do a move, and he's just staying in front. I'm like, damn, I'm kind of fast and quick. I'm like, damn, like, what happened? And I just felt like a shot in my side. And I'm like, I tell the side, I'm like, it might be over because I couldn't push off no more. And then, you know, halftime comes, and that's when they shut it down. They're like, you're done. And I'm like, I couldn't move. Fast forward, I'm done for the season. We go take a look at some surgeons to see if I needed surgery. The best option was to wait it out, to let, you know, the swelling go down, see, let the summer go by, and then see what I have. Then I get traded to Cleveland. So that's what hurt me the most, because they know
all the shit you went through.
I went through. Like, I played with my sister. That was my decision. So that's not on them. The only thing that I would put on them is they didn't give me the extent of my injury. That's the only thing. But I decided to play. So I'll take that hit. You said the payday. Obviously, that's in the back of my head.
Yeah,
I'm thinking about.
Come on, man. Number six.
Shit, 150. Like, I was going to be a max player. So to keep it real, I'm like, shit, I got to play. Like, you know, I'm 5'9". If I don't play, they going to forget about me. That's how I always felt, just being the smaller guard. So I played through it, hurt myself even more. Fast forward to August. Out of nowhere, Danny calls me like,
damn.
Asks me how my day was, this and that. And I'm like, okay, everything's solid. He's like, IT, I just traded you. I'm like, to where? He's like, Cleveland for Kyrie. And then, you know, obviously, I mean, it just don't seem real that at that point in time, I get off the phone with him, I tell my wife, tell my family, and I'm like, the only thing that made me hot about it, I think if I wasn't injured and I got traded, I would be like, cool, I'm not tripping. Shit, I'm going to play with Bron. We got a chance to win a championship. The fact that I was injured hurt me. Like, it hurt me. I'm a human at the end of the day. And the fact that they knew how bad my hip was and to trade me on that, that hurt. So, you know, there was a lot of people that, you know, was like, man, he should stop crying. It was like, first off, I wasn't the one bringing it up. The media was. I just answered the questions.
Mm-hmm.
And then second off, it was just like, at the end of the day, like, don't forget, like, I got real feelings. Like, I'm human at the end of the day. I'm not just a basketball player. So for them to trade me when I did get hurt on their watch, that was hurtful. But then after that, you know, I moved on. Like, I was able to rehab for like 6 months, play in January. I think I played 12, 13 games. It wasn't playing like they thought it was. They traded me to the Lakers. And then, you know, you go from being an all-star and MVP to, you know, being on a rebuilding Laker team that's not trying to make the playoffs in less than a year. That was a lot for me. And then, like I told you guys earlier, dealing with pain every day, like, man, I was going through it. Like, and at the end of the day, my sister still ain't around.
Right.
Like, so I'm still trying to figure that out. So for like 2-3 years straight, man, every day was a battle for me. Like, you know, not just hoop-wise, the health-wise. And that, like, I don't think people necessarily always understand that. Like, it wasn't even about hoop at that point. It was about, you know, every day trying to be in a good mood and have no pain.
Yeah. So you decided, obviously, just to wait it out then the first time around?
So the first time around, I decided to wait it out because I'm like, okay, the first option was to wait it out, see what it's going to be like when the swelling goes out.
I don't mean to cut you off. When did you find out how serious it was? When you heard it the second time, or do you still didn't know how serious it was?
No, so when I heard it the second time, when I was done with the season, we went to the best hip specialist. And that's when it was like, they've never seen cartilage go away that quick.
That's crazy.
So it went from in March, my shit was a normal hip, to bone on bone in June. Mm. Like, that's 3 months.
Right.
So in June, when we went to go, you know, to the top hip specialist in New York, that's when I knew, I'm like, you feel me? My hip is messed up. So I got to figure out what's the best option for me going forward. The number one option was the surgery I just got last year, but nobody got it. So I'm like, I'm not about to be the experiment.
Test dummy, right?
Yeah, I'm not about to, especially when my career's on the line. Like, I'm trying to get paid next year. At the end of the day, it was like, bro, I got to be available to get paid next year,
mm-hmm.
no matter what it is, whether it's max, whether it's a one-year contract.
Paid, regardless.
Whatever it is.
Right.
So I was like, I can't have an option of surgery because I'm going to have to sit out the whole year.
It's a whole, so how long was the process?
So it's really 8 to 10 months.
Damn.
You know, so that was I would have basically sat the whole year and went into free agency not playing off of surgery. That
off of hip surgery.
They haven't really seen nobody come off of. So then I rehabbed that year, play for the Cavs, 14 games, get traded, play a few games for the Lakers. I'm playing a little better for the Lakers, but then, like, my hip just still messed up. So I'm like, I talk it over with my close circle of people. I decide to just do arthroscopic surgery, try to clean it out and see if that will help. That shit made it worse.
Mm.
That shit made it worse. I rehabbed for like 10 months, and that's supposed to be like a 4-month rehab. It made it worse. I signed with Denver that year, the one year vet minimum. I don't play into February that year. They allowed me to take my whole time, so I appreciate the Denver Nuggets so much because they didn't pressure me into playing at all. They allowed me to take my time. Then, you know, I'm feeling cool, but I'm just not myself, and it's obvious. Like, I'm a shell of myself, and I'm having to tell people I'm cool to get by. Obviously, I'm 5'9", on an injured hip. Like, you know, I'm not really even supposed to be in the NBA at this point because I can't be myself. I'm not quick. I'm not fast. I'm not who, you know, was able to be all-stars. I'm not that no more. So then fast forward, I signed with the Wizards. I play 42 games. I start 40 of them. I'm playing solid, but still not great. Like, when you're little, you got to be exceptional. You got to, every night got to be special. And that wasn't me. They trade me to Clippers. I get waived. Mm. Fast forward, the pandemic happened. Everything shuts down. And that's when I had a heart-to-heart with myself. Like, okay.
That's tough.
We're going to ride this out and try to just force it and see if we can get on a team, or I'm going to fix my ultimate problem. And then, you know, I sat down with the surgeon. And that was the best decision of my life. It changed my whole life. You know, whether I'm on an NBA team or not. My daily life, I have no pain no more. I got 100% range of motion. My surgical hip is better than my normal hip. It changed my whole life. It got my mental in a space where nobody can ever take that from me again.
And when you get that shot, you capable of taking care of it completely now. You know what
I'm
I mean?
Good.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm really not tripping on anything. Cause I'm like, I know when it does come, like a real legit chance, I'm gonna be prepared and take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Before, it was like the cards had to be perfect.
Yeah.
Like I had to be walking into some minutes.
You wasn't unsure. You was unsure.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was basically telling them I was good and knowing I wasn't.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So everything had to be perfect. It had to be, okay, I'm gonna be a starter, I'm gonna be a sixth man, I'm gonna play 25 minutes. Now I know what I can work with.
Yeah.
Now it's like, you put me in any situation. If you really give me a chance, I'm gonna show you because I'm healthy.
Right.
And I'm only 32 years old.
Yeah.
Like, I really haven't played in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like I was banging my body and playing the last 82 games every year. Like, I really haven't hooped.
Yeah.
In two and a half years.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm ready to go.
It's something about us, man, when we play hurt, we on the outside in the shell, we physically like, yeah, man, we can do it. But in the back of our mind, we're like, man, why am I out here? I'm hurting.
And that's what it was. Every game, I'm like, I got to fake it, but I know deep down, like, I just don't got it.
I was
relying on the jump shot at 5'9". It's like my strength is going in the paint and making shit happen.
Yeah.
I couldn't do what I've always done. Mm. So that was the most frustrating part. And then, you know, like I said, once the pandemic hit, I had to be real with myself. I'm like, okay, we're going to either get the surgery or you're going to have to thug it out and live with the consequences.
Yeah.
And the surgery was like, okay, it's going to scare some people, but at the end of the day, I'm going to be healthy. And all I need is one person to give me a chance.
Yeah.
And it took me 6 months to get back. So, you know, I told you 8 to 10 months. It was 6 days a week for 7 straight months. Mm. In rehab, because mm-hmm. I knew what was at stake. It's like, this is my career on the line,
mm-hmm.
and I love this shit, so I'm going to do whatever it takes to, you know...
Get back.
Get it back, and I'm here today. You know, I obviously want to be on a team, but I know when my name is called, it's go time, and I'm ready to go for real.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18, my first game in Kentucky. They're saying Cal's a bust, he can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
My first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boogie, I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to be my name, bro.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
First he changed music, then he changed the world. The hit movie Bob Marley, One Love, is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life and legacy of an icon who inspired generations through his message of love, peace, and unity. In this powerful and uplifting film, discover Bob Marley's story of overcoming adversity and the journey behind his revolutionary music that changed the world. If you missed it in theaters, now's your chance to watch at home. Stream the hit movie Bob Marley, One Love, now on Paramount Plus, rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/One Love to try it free now.
So you've gone into great detail about the physical pain and day-to-day and even playing, but talk to us about the mental, because you said your mental is right and where you are mentally, because I'm sure the mental was more fucked up than your actual pain was.
Yeah, the pain was obviously there, but the mental was like, I couldn't hide that. Mm. I couldn't fake that. Like, you got to get through that somehow. And, you know, with everything happening back to back, my sister, me getting hurt, getting traded 3 or 4 times in that small span of time, like...
You start to question yourself.
Yeah, for the first time
anybody
in my life.
Would.
Yeah, like I'm like, damn, is it over or is this? Do I just got to do something else? And it was a lot for me. The mental part cooked me.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, I always was like, hoop is what I love. So until I can't do it no more, I'm gonna try.
Mm-hmm.
And I always told people, I'm like, the easy thing to do at the end of the day is to quit.
Just
like anybody can walk in and quit and be like, I'm going to throw the towel in, I'm tapping out. The hard thing to do is when some real adversity hits you to be like, okay, how do I get through that wall? How do I get through that adversity? Mm-hmm. And I just stayed down. I stayed solid. I had the right people around me. I remember D. Rose telling me when we was... D. Rose is one of my close homies. And he told me when he was going through his shit, he was like, I was trying to fight against everybody. Mm. And once I let that fight go, my mental just eased up. Mm. And I was able to get through it all. Mm-hmm. And once, you know, during that time with Cleveland and jumping the teams and chasing that max... Once I was done with that, like, and I had no more fight to prove to people, I was like, my mental just slowed all the way down. And then, shit, I did the surgery. I had no pain no more. I'm like, my money's good. I'm straight. My kids is healthy. But one thing that kept me going was my little boys was watching me every day.
Yeah, that's big.
Even though they would make jokes about, you're not in the league no more. You're not. Mm-hmm. You used to be. You miss everything now. You used to make everything in Boston. Like, those... That's what kept me going. Because I knew if I did lay down and tap out, at some point in their life, they're going to tap out when some shit get real.
That's why we commend you, bro. That's another reason why we want to have you on the show, because we like giving our brothers out they flowers. I know a lot of times, bro, I could be arguing with my girl, and I go to the game, and I'm not there. You know what I'm saying?
For real.
Just from an argument at home, yes. I can't go out and perform. So I commend you, bro, because for everything you've been through and to be able to perform and to still walk around with your chin up, knowing how even though we know it's not fair, but to still be strong, it take a lot, bro. And a lot of people that's on the outside looking in will never understand how hard that is.
Not at all. And that's the mental side of it. Like, we ain't even talking about the physical.
Yeah, that's
like, what you got to fight and work out every day and grind, and then you're playing against the best players in the world. Like, my physical wasn't there and my mental was checking out.
Yeah.
So, like, I was going through it, but, you know, they say it can't storm forever.
Right.
You know, at some point the sun got to come out, and I really felt that. And then having mentors like R.I.P. Kobe, R.I.P. Nipsey Hussle, and really taking that marathon lifestyle and knowing, okay, there's going to be bumps in the road. There's going to be tough times. You're going to hit adversity. But at the end of it, when you fight through that and you run through that wall, the only thing you can do is have your chin up and your chest out.
No feeling like it,
Man, nobody can tell me nothing no more.
Yeah.
Like, I've been through it. And I came out of it. You feel me? With my mental right, didn't do no goofy shit, didn't do no lame, nothing lame. Mm-hmm. I just stayed true to myself, and I stayed solid, and I just kept working. And, you know, I know at some point that opportunity is going to come, because I never cheated the game not one time. And I know it's going to come. And when it does, I'm going to take it and run with it. And I'm going to just smile.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be like, I told you so. I'm not going to shit on nobody.
Yeah.
I'm going to just smile and be appreciative and be like, you know, for the people that's looking, that's behind me, I'm going to be like, this is for you guys.
Yeah.
Because when you hit adversity, the best thing to do is just run through it.
Mm-hmm.
Find a way.
Got to. Ain't no choice. You get a chance to play for the U.S. basketball team. How good was it to get out there, play with Joe, but just get out there and really play again pain-free?
Man, it was everything. Because, you know, a lot of people be like, why are you going to play the USA? You was this and that. It's like, I got no pride for this game.
Right.
Like, this game blessed me with, you know, to have some money, to take care of my family. Like, I got no pride when it comes to hoop. I go.
But how is that bad, though?
How is that bad?
So many people are so out the loop,
man.
Bro.
I'm going to Puerto Rico to play for the USA team. It didn't matter. Me and Joe was laughing about that. Like, when they hit him for it, he's like, hell yeah. Like, to hoop for free, I mean, to hoop and go to Puerto Rico, travel the world, like, only real hoopers know that.
Yeah.
Though. Like, I ain't got no pride. Like, when I'm really done, I'm going to be hooping in the big three.
Right.
You feel me? Like,
exactly.
There's no pride about that. That's hoop
That's
against
how it
real
is.
Hoopers.
Yeah.
Like, so when I got the chance to
Ice
play...
Ice Cube just got excited. Go ahead.
No, man, you know he's going to give a touch.
He probably
heard you.
when I got the chance to play for Team USA in Puerto Rico, it was a no-brainer. When they asked, I'm like, bro, it gave me an opportunity to show that I'm healthy.
Yeah.
It gave me an opportunity to play basketball on the team. And I just took it and ran with it. I took it for what it was, and it was to go out there and play basketball.
Use it for your benefit.
And that's what I did, and I was happy about that. And it got me an opportunity with the Pelicans, you know, a month later. It got me a little cool 10-day with the Pelicans. And you know, that's just what I got to do to get back in, and I'm cool with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I love it. You mentioned our brother, rest in peace, Nipsey Hussle. You guys had a particularly close relationship. Talk to us about the relationship and what it was like.
Man, I met Nipsey back in 2009 when I was in college. He used to do shows up in Seattle. And I had a teammate that was from the Crenshaw District that put me on Nipsey, which is, his name is Darnell Gant. He went to Crenshaw High School and everything. He's the first one to put me on Nipsey's music back in 08. 09, you know, we communicated on Twitter somehow. We exchanged information. He came to Seattle, gave me some tickets. I got to chop it up with him. And then ever since then, we was, you know, we've been close. And he's just somebody that, you know, it's easy to relate to. No matter, you know, what walk of life you are, what he stood for, you can relate to if you're on an everyday grind, mm-hmm. you know. And I spoke about, you know, what he called the marathon. You know, it's a lifestyle. And he's somebody that, you know, one of my mentors, somebody that, you know, if I needed game on anything, you know, life, about, you know, the mental part of things, about keep going and running your race, that's somebody I always chopped it up with, and somebody that always gave me real genuine game, no matter what the circumstances was. And, you know, it's rest in peace to him forever, and somebody that, you know, left a huge mark on society, on the culture mm-hmm. of, you know, where, you know, guys like us come from. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he lived life the right way, and I think that's why so many people can't relate to, you know, what he stood for.
What's the best piece of advice he ever gave you?
I think just to never give up. You know, your race is your race. I remember one time he telling me, your race is your race. Don't ever compare it to nobody else's. And I think throughout my whole career, I always took that and ran with it. Because, you know, it's especially in our profession, it's hard to not compare yourself to the next dude.
Right.
Especially when dudes is getting paid and you play the same position and you producing the same. But once he told me that back in, like, before I got to the league, I took that and ran with it. I was never worried about what the next man was doing. I was always worried about and focused on, you know, my marathon and my mm-hmm. race, because my shit is going to be different than anybody else's. Mm-hmm. So how can I compare mine to somebody else when we're running two different marathons, two different races? And I think that's probably the best advice he gave me, and I take it in to this day.
Mm-hmm. Rest in peace to the homie.
Yep.
From one fallen legend to another, Kobe, you wore his number when you had your brief 10-day with the Pelicans. Talk to us about what he meant to you and some experience you have with Kobe.
Man, Kobe meant everything to me. Kobe was...
I see you light up.
Kobe was
name.
My Michael
yeah.
Jordan.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. Kobe was, like I said, my family's from Inglewood, so I was brainwashed into being a Laker fan. So... In 96, I was 7 years old, and knowing who Kobe was, getting drafted, Shaq just came over. Like, that was my childhood, you know, being
you
able
was
to.
Six when we graduated?
Seven, yeah, 97. Yeah. I mean, 96, I was 7 years old.
Dang, I feel old.
That's how when I got my 10-day, I'm only 32 now. When I got my 10-day, a young dude called me OG. I'm like, bro, don't do that. We're going to wait a few years, fam. But then I
40.
Asked him how old he was. He like, I'm 20. I'm like, damn.
You got to touch 40 for you. You got to touch 40.
I was like, I feel you, but I'm not that yet.
He was born in the 2000s, though.
Yeah, he was.
That's crazy.
I was like, I'm not that yet. But Kobe, you know, he was everything to my life, not just hoop. You know, I wanted to be him. I knew I wasn't, just because I wasn't going to be 6'6". I wasn't going to be as big as him. But, you know, he inspired me in so many different ways. And then when I was able to, you know, reach that level of, you know, one of the top guys in the NBA, I was able to build a relationship with Kobe. And it wasn't just no hoop relationship. It was an everyday, you know, lifestyle relationship in terms of, if I was going through something, I can hit him, and he was hitting me right back. And, you know, he meant everything to me. When I was able to build that friendship with him, it was crazy checking my phone and seeing a text from Kobe.
Right.
Like, it didn't make no sense because, you know, I looked up to him for so long. So, you know, when I got signed with the Pelicans and they were giving me jersey options and 24 was there, it was a no-brainer. Like, mm-hmm. I wanted to do my part into paying some type of homage to mm-hmm. my favorite player to ever play the game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was able to, you know, pay a little bit of homage to them the little 2 weeks I was there and playing in the NBA. And, you know, that's the least I can do. And, you know, I've been wearing Kobe since 2015 to where, you know, I get my little customized Kobe's.
Mm-hmm.
And,
don't let Jack hear that.
You know, yeah, even that is like, you know.
Unreal.
It's unreal.
See, I'm looking at this for
you. Look, even that's unreal to be able to, you know, and then when I was with Cleveland, I had my own player edition Kobe's where they came out. And they had a little chip on the tongue to where, you know, when my tooth came out in the playoffs. So, like, and Kobe did that. You feel me? And then Kobe to do the little, he did like a deer basketball on me. And it was like those things that Kobe did, like I'm a cherish for the rest of my life. Cause that's, you know, that's a walking legend. And, you know, I can't thank him enough for not just changing my basketball career, but changing my way of life. And, you know, to be able to call those two guys, rest in peace, mentors and somebody that I could, you know, when they were here, reach out at any time and they hit me right back. Like, you can't ask for, you know, two people better than that.
Talk to us about the Book of Isaiah, your documentary on your journey through this tough process.
So the Book of Isaiah, we started in 2015. But overall, once my career's over, I want to do a movie because I got a production company called Slow Grind Media. We're slowly doing documentaries, sports documentaries, real life, you know, things, not just sports, but every walk of life, we're trying to tap into those lanes. So at the end of my career, I'm going to do a movie on my whole career from my last year of college to my last year in the NBA. And it's going to be called The Book of Isaiah. And, you know, we've done a couple of documentaries, which won a Webby, which is Book of Isaiah 2 won a Webby that year that I was in Cleveland and got traded to the Lakers. That won a Webby. And I think, you know, I just want to tell my story because it relates to so many people in the world. You know, me being, you know, 5'9", me being counted out, me being not given no real chance to really succeed like everybody else be given. I think that relates to the average, you know, the average person out there. And to just show them that, you know, I go through real shit that everybody goes through, and to show them the ups and downs of a real career, I think it will only be beneficial to, you know, the next generation of guys trying to make it, not just in basketball, but, you know, in life. Because, you know, the things that I've been through have been, you know, it just haven't been sugarcoated. And it's also been documented. Like my shit, I seen the bottom and I seen the top. And then seeing the bottom again. A lot of people's careers don't get to see both.
Right.
And, you know, I want to, obviously I've been documenting since 2010, but I want people to really see it a day in and day out of what guys like, you know, ourselves go through.
I think you said something interesting. You started at low, the 60th pick, not sure if you're going to be drafted, to an all-star averaging nearly 30 points a game, playing an all-star game with Kobe, back down to the injury, you didn't know how bad it was to having to have that surgery. How much did that just wear on you as a person?
It wore on me a lot. You know, that goes back to them 3 years where my mental was just, I was trying to find it. You know, the up and down and the inconsistency of, you know, not knowing what's next. Like going from the 60th pick, not knowing if I'm gonna make the team, to proving that, you know, I'm an NBA player, to getting traded to Boston and, you know, being a sixth man at first to taking it to, I was fourth in MVP voting, second team all NBA. Then a year later, or that year getting traded to hitting rock bottom, getting injured, to signing 1 year deals, to going from supposed to sign a max deal, to signing 1 year vet minimum deals. Like that shit hurt, that shit. That killed my spirit. But what helped me throughout those times is I had them little boys at home, bro, that I couldn't be sad in front of them. I couldn't have a bad day in front
of them. They feel it. They feel
the
energy.
Like, they feel that. They see that. So that was my motivation to get it back and to hopefully get a chance to show that, you know, I'm who I always been, and I'm gonna be that, and let me go out on my own. That's what I'm fighting for now. I'm just fighting for a legit chance to show that I'm myself and that I have plenty of years to show I can still play at a high level. But to answer your question, mentally, man, I was cooked. I was cooked for a little bit, but you know, I thank my small circle of friends, my small circle of family, and, you know, my mentors, I thank them for just sticking with me. I remember, you know, Damon Stoudemire texted me, like, what don't break a nigga will make a nigga, you know?
Facts.
And I take that to heart every day. You know, I won't allow this shit to break me, ever.
Okay.
And, you know, if it did, it wouldn't. It won't.
It can't.
It can't. Right. And I'm not going to allow it, ever. Ever. And like I said, I'm in a great space. Mentally, I'm in a great space that, you know, that's not gonna, it don't rock. It don't rock like a boat no more. I'm even keeled. Don't get too high. Don't get too low.
I want to see you make it back just so you could talk shit back to your kids.
Yeah,
I'm
me
to
too.
A point where my kids be talking big shit and I can't. I'm done playing. I can't talk. You know what I mean? It just all right.
No doubt.
All right, little nigga, shut up.
Yeah,
but you got a chance to get back
too,
out there, right?
They be
talking
on my
big
head.
Shit, right?
They be on my head. Like you ain't what you used to. All right.
One of my sons said something to me that I would have fought someone else for saying to me. Like, all right, that's how you feel.
And you know it's. There's no sugarcoating when it's them.
Daggers.
They're hitting you right here. And I'm like, I'm just smiling it off. Like, ooh, I wish I could play you one-on-one.
No filter at all.
That's funny. Going through everything you've been through, the ups, downs, the roller coasters, what advice would you give a younger player?
The advice I would give a younger player, I think the same advice D-Rose gave me. Don't fight it.
Mm.
Just take the punches. Keep grinding. And, you know, it can't storm forever. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that I try to tell those young guys coming in is, like, enjoy the moment, bro. That's one thing I wasn't able to enjoy when I was at the top, because it was just, what's next? I got to do better. I was so paranoid. Enjoy those moments, bro, because they're going to pass. And you're going to look back and be like, dang. And that's what, you know, when I was injured, I was dealing with, like, dang, I was doing some crazy shit.
Mm-hmm.
I was breaking Larry Bird's records. I was breaking, you know, the greats' records. And I was so locked into those moments on some Kobe shit. I was so on some Mamba mentality. Like, it's just not good enough. I got to keep going.
Mm.
To where I think that's the best advice I can give those young dudes is stay in those moments, bro. Whether they're good or bad, enjoy those. Enjoy those moments and keep grinding. And don't get satisfied. Because once you get comfortable out there, you know, they got another 19-year-old that's coming in trying to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't be complacent in this, and you know, in this life, in this world.
Right.
Because, you know, it's what have you done for me lately.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts on Mayweather, Paul? Will you be in attendance?
We will be.
I'm not going to be in attendance.
That's
but
your boy.
It's going to be entertaining. I know the setup with this.
Talk to him? No, that's your boy.
Yeah. I haven't spoke to him since this. But
what's the secret?
He's just gonna entertain. He's an entertainer,
right?
So he's not gonna try to punish him for all of the antics he done.
Oh,
now?
He gonna try to punish him. Oh, yeah. No doubt. I know Floyd, and when money talks, but it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be entertainment, and then he's gonna make his case.
Mm-hmm. Have you talked to him since he snatched his hat?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
he was
mad. When
he was hot, so I know that's what I'm saying. Right. He's gonna make it to where
he didn't wear the durag the night before.
he didn't wear it. He didn't lay it down the night before. Not at all. I think that's why he was really hot.
That's what I'm saying.
That was.
Now you know the champ.
Come on,
the champ always
clean,
clean,
fresh,
Gucci, all from head to toe.
That was the first time we seen him.
$20 million on the wrist.
Hey, the one day they caught him slipping.
That was the first time we seen him slipping. That was the first time we seen
ever.
He wasn't.
But he's gonna have to pay for that though.
No, he's gonna have to pay for that. That's on the back of his head. Like,
yeah.
He know he gonna entertain the people who's watching, but he gonna make a you know why I do this.
I can't wait to see.
Nah, it's gonna be fun.
What about since we talk about it? What about Ocho Cinco? What you think he gonna do?
Come on, man. He's an entertainer too.
He's an athlete.
At the end of the day, he's gonna be locked in. You know, I hope he's locked in.
I hope he's locked in too.
I mean, since we're talking about boxing, obviously the homie is our homie too. What were your thoughts when Nate fought Jake and then the outcome?
The outcome was surprising.
Can y'all laugh with it? Can you laugh with him about it yet?
Yeah, I think it's to a point you can laugh with him now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like we've had our talks about it. And he's laughed it off, so, I mean, you know, obviously.
Right.
He got $1 million for it.
I mean, shit happens, bro. Right. At the end of the day, you're not a boxer.
I'd have been down to TKO for free. So, shit, you know what I mean?
Come on, man. So, like, at the end of the day, obviously, the internet's undefeated.
Right.
You're going to get your little, you know, everybody going to make jokes about it. It was on national TV. But that's my dude.
Right,
I'm
going
to ride with him to the world.
Yeah.
And he was in a fraternity that, you know, that's our guy. So obviously he got knocked. But, you know, you live and you learn, it's on to the next.
A lot of people don't have the balls to get in there and scratch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, most don't have the balls to go do that.
And, you
know, he did it. He got knocked. We move on.
At
the end of the day, we men and I'm not going to be at his house cracking jokes about it.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody crack a joke, if he want to crack one, we going to crack him. But if not, you know, we just got to keep it moving. It happened, and, you know.
That's it.
He's still Nate the Great and all that.
Oh, no question.
Yeah, I remember.
On, greatest athlete
after,
ever.
Yeah, after that happened, I text him. I remember I'm like, you know, because, you know, everybody been in situations where they've been embarrassed. And
yeah.
I was like, bro, you still a superhero where we come from.
Straight
don't
up.
Forget that.
Yeah.
You feel me? So I tried to say my two cents and just remind him, like, you're still the greatest where we come from.
Nah,
so.
Yeah. Hey, real talk, Nate's one of the great best athletes I've ever seen in my life.
We ever seen.
Straight up and down.
We ever seen.
Straight
so,
up and down.
You know, that don't define you.
Right.
No. But, it was funny.
We're going to laugh for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah,
no,
we're going to laugh.
No question.
That's my dude.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, no quick question. Hitters. First thing to come to mind, shoot it at us. Top 5 point guards of all time.
Damn, that's tough.
Right off the
rip. Start it off, yeah, off the cuff.
Right off the rip.
I'm going to go with my namesake, Isaiah Thomas. You got to pay homage to Magic Johnson, mm-hmm. first big point guard. And then I'm going to go just my era. I'm going to go Steph Curry, Kyrie Irving, Chris Paul.
Mm-hmm. Solid.
And no disrespect, this is just top 5 off the top.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, solid.
Rapid fire.
You plus 4 going to the blacktop. Who you taking with you?
Blacktop, that's different. So we're taking.
You don't even have to be NBA dudes.
Making
shots.
Yeah.
You never know what pop up.
Yeah, you got to be built to be out there. So for the love of it, I'm going to take Jamal Crawford.
Of course.
I'm ready for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's me, Jamal Crawford. On some real shit, I'm gonna take y'all too because I need some goons.
You know what's going on.
In case some shit go down, we need some dudes that's gonna handle some stuff.
We
so
gonna
that's
get gonna home.
That's 4 right there. The black top. And now I'm gonna take Kyrie. Yeah, because he's gonna put on the show.
Hey, we don't have to do nothing.
Nah.
Fight. We security.
Yeah, that's what I said, just fight.
We security.
So we right now and rebound and kick it
out. We gonna be embarrassing the dude. Shit get out of hand.
Yeah. I can set some screens. Yeah.
We're going to be betting. We're going to be making all the side bets.
Come on, man.
We're going to win.
During timeouts, I'm going to be smoking.
Now, we ain't working harder. We working smarter, baby. I got my protection.
Nice.
Top 5 artists, in your opinion?
Top 5 artists, Jay-Z, Drake, Tupac, Biggie, and Nipsey.
Ooh, that's my list.
Let me ask you a question. Yeah, that is your list.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the most famous rapper from Seattle?
Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Sir Mix-a-Lot, for sure.
Right, baby got back.
How old were you when that shit was? You was a baby, though, right?
Yeah, I was a baby when he was rolling around in the Ferrari, the red Ferrari.
Mm-hmm.
He has some things out there, too.
Yeah,
his videos were live.
Right, he ran it for sure.
The best 5 players ever from Seattle, Washington. Area.
Best 5, you go with... Ooh, that's tough. Nate Robinson... Jason Terry, Jamal Crawford, Brandon Roy. Damn. That one's tough. I'm going to go with Martell Webster because he was the first to go out of high school. And I always got to pay homage to him.
Yeah.
He's the first to go out of high school from our state. So I'm going to go with him. I'm going to be the 6th man. So.
Yeah.
I'm going to deter off this question real quick. We'll get back to it. Tell people how good Brandon Roy was.
Ah, man. And I remember a lot of interviews back then. You will always say he's one of the toughest to guard. Kobe said he had no weaknesses. Brandon Roy on one knee, because he only
from
had one
jump.
Knee even from
in
the
college.
Jump. One of the most special dudes. I always say, I mean, he would have been Hall of Fame if he didn't get hurt. He would have went down as one of the best shooting guards to play. And for somebody like Kobe to say he had no weaknesses, Ron Artest, I think, said he was the hardest guy he might have had to guard. Brandon Roy was the real deal.
He was tough for all of us because the size he was too shifty.
Too shifty.
You know what I mean?
He loved to go left.
He had a lot in his bag.
But his strong hand was right. So, like, which way do you force him?
Yeah, and his step back was before his time.
But he had a weird way of, with his size, being able to back anybody down.
Yeah.
It was weird. Like, he would back you down like Kobe could back you down. No matter how big and strong you are, he still back you. You still get him. I'm like, what? How does this little motherfucker moving me?
B-Roy was special. And like you said, I mean, from the jump, it'd been on one knee.
Mm-hmm.
Most don't know that.
Yeah.
And then his other knee, you start messing up. But B-Roy is special.
Legend. 5 dinner guests, dead or alive?
5 dinner guests. So guys that I want to be with me mm-hmm. at the dinner table.
Mm-hmm. You plus 5, dead or alive.
Man, I want Tupac because I just want to mm-hmm. I want to hear all the stories. I'm going to go with my guys, Nipsey and Cole. I want Snoop there. So Nipsey, Cole, Snoop, Tupac. I always wanted to meet Will Smith. I never got to meet Will Smith, I would like him there.
That's what's up. This is a loaded question right here because you got a lot of motherfuckers that you know that we want. So,
if you could have your choice to pick the guest that you want to see on All the Smoke, who would it be?
Who would it be?
And if you know him, you need to help us.
Yeah.
Because I got a list already.
Who of do Seattle you want people. To see?
Yeah, I got one off the rip.
Jamal hasn't been on, right?
Mm-mm. No, thank you.
We got to get Jamal. I'm going to get Jamal. I'm going to call him right after.
Yeah, we need
Jamal
showtime.
Crawford, because he has all the stories in the world.
He has stories about us.
That's
me
what I'm
for
saying.
Sure.
No doubt.
Me for sure.
His memory's insane.
Oh, his memory is unbelievable.
He's going to go up here tickling us after every joke. after every question.
Hey, Jamal says that's big bro. Jamal got to come on here, because he has stories from what did he come in, 99, 2000? He got Jordan stories.
Yes.
He got a lot. So I would love for him to, and it's authentic on here. So he going to break it down and not sugarcoat nothing.
Good
Jamal
deal.
Crawford got to be on here.
But people don't know, Jay Crawford is one of the best basketball minds you could be around.
Oh, yeah,
But he kind of like you, though. Like, he's a student of the game. He can tell you stats and all.
He can talk hoop all day.
Oh, my God, bro.
Put him on the spot real quick. You got your phone on you?
Yeah.
FaceTime.
Oh, let me call.
Damn. Showtime.
Oh, you know he ain't got FaceTime. He got a BlackBerry.
Oh, yeah, he's got the green phone. That's right.
He got the BlackBerry. The only person I know with the BlackBerry.
Him.
And
it probably
D-Rose.
Still a flip.
Jay Craw.
D. Rose.
They must got a deal with BlackBerry or
something.
They
must got something. I'm about to call him right now and see if he has answer.
Showtime.
And you know he don't answer.
Oh, fam.
Damn.
You know them are my guys.
Hey, Jay, this is what he used to tell me for every game. One with layup line. Oh, I smell it. What was that? Oh, the popcorn popping. Oh, I smell it. Oh, I smell it. It's popping. Oh, it's popping.
You know, look.
It's showtime.
Hey, Jamal.
It's showtime.
Look, you on speakerphone. I got Stack and Matt here. We on live the show. You
all
gotta come on.
We need you, bro.
I gotta come on. You know when I got to LA, I'm going there first.
Showtime. what's up, Showtime?
Hey, Prime. Prime, what you doing?
He called me Prime Time. That's my boy.
Nah, they wanted me to call you because we gotta get. They need you on the
we
show.
We need you, fam.
They need
I've been trying to get on there for 2 years. I said, I know they got a master plan. They just waiting to bring me on. Yeah, they just waiting
to bring me on. Hey, look, we were saying you got all the stories in the world. That's why you got to come on.
Hey, I got stories I was saving just for their show.
Ooh,
hey, stop it, Showtime.
Hey, we can't wait, fam.
See, he got it off the top of his head, too. That's funny. Nah, I was just calling you, fam. Man.
Okay, well, y'all have a good time. I'm coaching the kids, bro. I love it.
Yeah, it's dope, right?
I see what I've been missing.
I told you, man. Hey, and your little man's a killer, too.
Yeah, he be balling. He's balling. He's getting better, too.
Come on, man. It's your son. What you expect?
Yeah,
you
know.
Play just like him. All right,
fam. All
right, boy.
Jamal.
That's funny.
Dope.
Yeah.
We got to get
him.
Hey,
man, we appreciate your time, man. Thank you. Best of luck, man. We love your journey. We respect your journey. Appreciate you, man.
We appreciate you coming, bro.
No, we appreciate you, man.
The fans been asking, so.
Yeah, and like Jack said, man, you've been through a hell of a journey. At the end of the day, like, you have this together, and I love that you said it. That's why I extensively asked you, because you didn't see the best, and you didn't see the worst, and you're still here, man, and we with you, so.
I appreciate
you know, man.
It.
We love you. We appreciate you.
It's all love, always.
Absolutely.
Rocking with you.
That's a wrap. All the Smoke. Special guest, Isaiah Thomas. You can catch us on Showtime Basketball YouTube or the iHeart platform, Black Effects. See y'all next week.
All of it.
This is All the Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeart Radio in partnership with Showtime.
The hit movie Bob Marley, One Love, is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life and music of an icon who inspired generations through his message of love, peace, and unity. If you missed Bob Marley, One Love in the theaters, now's your chance to watch at home. Stream the hit movie now on Paramount Plus, rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/One Love to try it free now.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie, ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox